Part 4, Chapter 22. Love Comes to My Door. May 2010. As I've started writing this section, we've had two earthquakes here in California. I'm the first to admit that I'm not good at earthquakes. I always tell my husband, Eric, that I'm a tornado girl because I did so many classroom drills growing up in Texas. I know to shelter in place, find my foundation, wait things out. Earthquakes throw me because I am someone who relies on the ground beneath my feet. When I write or pray, I like to be close to the ground, and I draw strength from its sureness. When it shakes, something so permanent also seems fragile. I have that same need to hold on to something when I think about all the chance moments that brought Eric and me together. My hands move to touch him or one of my kids to feel that sureness we five souls all really found one another. They are the foundation I have built my life on. I know that God put us together, but it still seems incredible that love literally came to my doorstep on a beautiful May evening. So many things had to happen for our paths to cross. Not just that first night, but in the 30 years we spent preparing ourselves for each other. I see us in a split-screen montage of scenes crafted from the memories he shared with me. And I know his heart so well, like the faithful musical girl in Texas is somehow there with Eric Maxwell Johnson, a smart and thoughtful boy growing up in Needham, Massachusetts. While I went to recording companies in New York to pursue my dreams, he went to Yale, an academic All-American wide receiver who graduated with nearly every receiving record in the book. If people talked about my voice, they talked about Eric's hands. He remains legendary at Yale for being able to catch anything. While I was 3 days away from releasing my first album, he was at the Yale Bowl, diving to make the impossible game-winning touchdown against Harvard with 29 seconds left in the game. It was a moment so famous in Ivy League football history, it's still known as the catch. And by the time he graduated, the Massachusetts guy who had broken Harvard's heart also broke every receiving record in the Yale book. Our separate lives began to accelerate. While I was landing in the papers of my first USO tour, the New York Times was profiling him for transforming his body to play tight end for the NFL. Hall of Fame coach Bill Walsh, then San Francisco 49ers general manager, watched a videotape of Eric's workout that his agent had sent around to get interest going for the 2001 NFL draft. Bill believed in his potential, just like people believed in mine. Eric played first for the San Francisco 49ers for 6 years, then spent 1 year with the New Orleans Saints. We both married people for love, and we sat with our spouses watching each other on TV, catching glimpses of each other as channels flipped by. Me on Newlyweds, him on ESPN. How many times we must have seen each other and yet not known. Oh, there you are. Then each of our marriages had ended. His, just as injuries forced him into early retirement. Mine, as I was forced to reevaluate who I really was. The first part of 2010 was a time of renewal for each of us. He was finalizing his divorce and studying ways to heal his body from the trauma of football. He studied meditation and researched non-traditional medicine with Master Mingyi Wang, a teacher-healer based in California. Eric lived like a monk, first sleeping in a tent on a roof in San Francisco. And after a long trip to China with Master Wang, he moved to Venice, a beachy neighborhood in LA. While he went for long walks with his dog, I had stepped back from the spotlight and was happy to be single and alone. I needed to clear my head and heart because everybody who I allowed in, I gave everything to. For once, I gave all that to me. Here the memories start to quicken. Eric was going to go to the University of Pennsylvania's prestigious Wharton Business School and visited for orientation welcome weekend. While he was there, he met another guy from LA named Matt. When they were back home in LA, Matt called Eric and asked if he wanted to go out with some friends of his, Dan and Brett, to the Village Idiot. Eric said yes, but then realized he had basically agreed to hang out with a bunch of people he had never met. He thought about canceling, but decided against it. Life was an open door. He was up for walking through. Brett didn't get the memo that night was supposed to be guys' night. so he brought his girlfriend Lolo, who is a childhood friend of my sister Ashley. Lolo was like a fairy that evening, flitting about with wide eyes and a great smile. She called Ash, who was at my house. I'd invited a bunch of people over to watch a basketball game, though I don't even watch basketball. But it was a time I didn't want to go out much, and I liked my friends knowing they could drop by whenever they wanted. It was kind of a Grand Central Station of nice people coming and going, and I liked it that way. It reminded me of my youth group days in Dallas, only with booze and rock music. Lolo got right to it. "I'm stuck at a boys' night at the Village Idiot," she said. Ashley told me what she said, and we made faces at each other like Tinkerbell was trapped on the pirate ship. "Tell her to get over here," I said. But Lolo thought she could hang in, hatching the beginnings of a plan for Eric. Lolo had found one of the rarest of birds, a man in L.A. who was single, cute, and cool. At about midnight, Eric got tired of all the small talk with strangers. "I'm gonna go," he said. "It was nice meeting all of you." "Wait," Lolo said, practically jumping at him. "I have a friend for you. Should I call her?" she asked. "See if she can come out?" "Maybe," Eric said. "You're gonna love her," she said. "Her name's Turkey." "No, that's not my nickname." She was thinking of setting Eric up with our friend Stephanie, who we called Wild Turkey because she was legendary in her pursuit of a good time. I've known Turkey since I became her babysitter back in Dallas when I was 14. She's fantastic, and I remain grateful that Turkey was in a songwriting session that night and didn't want to leave. Eric went to go, and just as Destiny's door was about to quietly close shut, Lolo asked, "Do you want to go to Jessica Simpson's house?" He turned. "Well, that was out of nowhere," Eric said. "Okay, sure." He caught a ride with one of the people he barely knew to go to the house of a woman he'd only seen on TV. When Eric walked through the courtyard of my Hansel and Gretel home, people were scattered both inside and outside. Ashley sat at the glass table on the porch outside my kitchen, singing show tunes. She was wearing a black circle-brimmed hat and didn't stop singing as Lolo kissed her cheek hello. Ashley nodded at Eric, and Lolo spotted me in the kitchen. I was with my friend Gina, standing next to a dream interpretation book on the counter. "Hi," I said. "Hi, I'm Eric," he said, looking down at the book. It was dog-eared with tons of post-it notes marking pages. "You analyze your dreams," he said, smiling at me. Did I say something poetic? Something about how, as an artist, I try to harness what my subconscious tells me? No. "Oh, yes," I said, "because last night I dreamed I pooped out a pig." His eyes got wide and he started to laugh. "Wait," I said. "Then that pig had a pig and then all of us played together." "Okay," he said. "That's cool. I like dreams." I looked up at Eric, a foot taller than me, at 6'3". I was in my Uggs, wearing a big gray sweatshirt and short shorts, my signature look for the gatherings at home. "Your place is beautiful," he said. I offered them a tour of the house, and I could see Eric taking it in. I was proud of my home, the first one that was all mine. It was girly but sophisticated, the old Hollywood style of Marilyn Monroe and Jean Harlow. Justin Credible, a comedian who also did magic, had stopped by. A bunch of people watched him do card tricks. I joined in, and he correctly guessed the card I pulled, a three of spades. People kept asking how he did it, but I was content just to let the mystery be. It's sweet now to me that my first conversation with Eric were about dreams and the magic happening around us. I know the pig thing was silly and maybe a little gross, but I see Sarah's hand in there with her love of pigs. We migrated back to the kitchen, he and I making small talk. We then moved to make room for people dancing by and sat down in the little stairwell in the nook of my kitchen. It was one of my favorite parts of the house, a narrow hallway that snuggles you in with steps just wide enough for two people to sit. We talked shoulder to shoulder, and an hour went by, then another. It was like we were catching each other up on our lives. We got deep real fast, talking about our own spiritual journeys. With other men, I was afraid to talk, but with Eric, there was no fear of judgment. This was completely new. As it got late, people started to leave. I saw Eric's new friend Dan saying his goodbyes. You're cute, I said to Eric before I even knew what I was saying. You should stay.
Stay? He said.
Okay, I can stay. But you have to mean that because my ride is leaving.
No, I want you to stay.
All right, he said, smiling. I'll stay. We talked another 2 hours. The house finally emptied of people hugging us goodbye. It was like the end of a wedding. We kissed on those steps, and I led him up to my room. The next morning, which was not far away, he was going to an all-day Marianne Williamson seminar about learning to apply spiritual principles to your career. He'd committed to going with a friend who was coming to pick him up. I was dead asleep in bed, so he left a note on a paper towel in the kitchen, next to the 3 of spades I got from the magician. The note read, "Jessica, I had to leave early. Thanks for having me over last night. We'll call, text later. Eric." This guy just left Jessica Simpson naked in bed to go see Marianne Williamson, I said aloud. He waited a day to text me. He told me later he didn't want to push it. I wanted to meet him sober and didn't want to risk paparazzi. Why ruin someone's life if things don't work out? I invited him to come over to watch the American Idol finale with me that Wednesday. He told me he had a yoga teacher training that night and could come over after. When I hung up, I said, "Who is this guy?" That night, he came over with a 4-pack of Guinness. I had already invited my friend Lauren to watch the show, and I was excited they seemed to click instantly. They were both from out east and had a similar smart sense of humor. We watched the show, talking during breaks about the performances. I am good at critiques of technique and material from all my years of working with my vocal coach Linda and then the A&R with Teresa. I felt confident as I talked this way and not afraid that I might be showing off. There was no need to dim my light around this man. As soon as it was over, I got out my laptop to take him down a YouTube rabbit hole of live performances. Things like Mariah Carey's first ever appearance on TV singing Vision of Love, and Queen completely mesmerizing 72,000 people at Wembley during Live Aid. Then I made him watch every episode of The Price of Beauty, which I was so proud of. I realize now that I was unconsciously saying, "Here, these are my heroes. The Price of Beauty is who I really am. Let's get to the heart of this." I wasn't naive. I knew that I had been in the public eye long enough that Eric would have preconceptions of me. I could tell he was seeing past all that. When he said goodbye to us, I invited him to a photo shoot I was doing the next day. "Maybe you want to stop by?" "No, not really," he answered quickly. "That is absolutely not my scene." I wasn't hurt because it made sense. He wasn't interested in being some guy hanging out waiting. "If we go out after, maybe I'll call you," I said, having every intention of doing so. Once the shoot was finished, we met at Nobu in Hollywood, and Eric got a crash course in most of my girlfriends, my mom, and some of the girls who worked on the collection. Turkey showed up, a slash of red lipstick on her gorgeous mouth, and Lolo explained that Eric was originally meant for her. They thought it was hilarious, each certain it would never have worked out. They turned out to be soulmates in a different way and have become best friends. It was at Nobu I found out Eric was vegan and almost did a spit take. "Well, I'm changing that," I thought. I did for a time, but he went back to eating that way. I watched him eat what amounted to salad-stuffed rice rolls and asked, "How are you happy? Aren't you starving?" But I liked that athlete's focus on his health, and I thought about my papa and how he was always in tune with his body. Eric and I kissed at the restaurant, and then at the bar we all went to after. It's a miracle no one saw us and told the press, but for the first time in years, I wasn't even thinking of that. We came home and made love. It was Memorial Day weekend, and he just stayed. In the morning, I watched him sit outside with his feet in my koi pond, meditating. "Who is this guy?" I thought. I started taking pictures to send to my friends. They got to see the real thing because my friends were in and out all weekend. Through Eric's eyes, I appreciated them even more. Other times, a boyfriend had meant I had gone into exile, abandoning my girlfriends to focus on a relationship. But now it was like he was holding each one up like a gem, turning it to see the glorious uniqueness of each one. They saw something special in us too,
and the care we took with each other. Why are we acting like an old married couple? Erica asked me that weekend. This light walked into my life, and I remember the moment I realized I didn't have to give him my light. We could share it and make things brighter for everybody. Well, I thought, that's refreshing. Yes, I was instantly infatuated with Eric. You know, I fall in love too easily, but with him, we were both ready for the real deal. Eric told his parents he was dating me early on. Stephen and Mary Jo are from Boston, and they are very New England in their demeanor. They are brilliant and not very engaged with pop culture. His mother, who was a big firm lawyer at the time, expressed shock when he said he was dating Jessica Simpson, the pop singer. The one that shaved her head? She has two kids, right? No, no, he said. I think you're thinking of Britney Spears. Well, when I met them, I could see how they raised someone like Eric. His parents were best friends, but they were also in love. My parents were just best friends. Meeting them showed me you could be both. One night in June, Eric was reading something that quoted a Pablo Neruda line he repeated to me. My soul is an empty carousel at sunset. A poem in just one sentence. It stayed with me. I'd felt like that for a long while, waiting for somebody to come along so I could be of use. But now I was a girl who ran to the carousel, gliding through the lights and the music, holding my breath as the horse went up and down. I felt exactly what I should. Happiness. I wanted to go on this ride again and again, and I was always first in line to get back on, laughing as I whipped around one more time. In the midst of this, I planned a girls' trip to Italy's Isle of Capri for my 30th birthday in July. As we got closer, I realized how much I was going to miss Eric. My housekeeper, Evelyn, is the one who told me that I had to take him with me. You'll regret it if you don't. I flew us out to Capri along with Ashley, my parents, and about a dozen girlfriends, and we had a gorgeous hotel high on a cliff. We girls all partied so hard the first night, Eric could barely keep up. With Ashley and my crowd fully melded into one, we had become a happy-go-lucky band of ladies, just enjoying life. I rented a yacht to take us from Capri to Pompeii. I'll be honest, I wanted to see the stone phalluses that are peppered throughout the city's walls and streets. So the day was basically one long penis joke. Someone had warned me that I had to wear sneakers because of the cobblestones. Now, I don't even have flats, so I definitely didn't have sneakers. I got Asics and wore them with jean shorts and a muscle tee. I looked absolutely ridiculous. Meanwhile, Ashley and all my friends were dressed for the cover of Italian Vogue. It was the least sexy I have felt in my entire life at a time when I was embracing the beauty of sex. But I had to laugh because I was having great sex. On my birthday, we all had dinner at a restaurant sitting outside by the sea. It was my favorite people at one table, their beautiful faces lit by candlelight. Adrian had a tradition where we each went around talking about what the birthday girl meant to them. I had never made a big deal about my birthday before, so this was the first time I was the focus of the ritual. What people said was so amazing. I think we moved through the world assuming people know what they mean to us, but so often those assumptions fall short. I'm one of those people who has a lot of best friends. I just love them all differently. But for some reason, a lot of those people just consider me their one best friend. I was so moved, but I kept it together until we got to Casey. Casey is so quick-witted, I expected a funny story. "I'm so proud of you, Jessica," she said. She talked about watching me bloom recently, moving away from fear and becoming a strong woman. I began to weep because I thought I had failed her in my divorce. She had come in and out of my life around John, and I thought I had broken her heart when I left Nick. With her speech, I felt released from that guilt. It was the best gift she could have given me. If someone I looked up to so much said that she was proud of me, I had to be doing something right. My friends and family surprised me with a cake, a gorgeous circle of icing flowers, and one pink candle in the very center. I know I told you I believe in birthday wishes. As my friends finished singing happy birthday, I looked into the glow of the flame, made my wish, and blew it out. Later in our room, I sat on the bed and watched Eric doing half-naked qigong in the corner. I loved him. "Babe," I said. He looked over. "I know we're not supposed to tell our wishes, but I can't keep my mouth shut about this one." He said nothing, just stood at the edge of the bed. "This could scare you off," I continued. "But I wished for a baby girl, and I would like to make that wish happen with you." He leaned over and kissed me. Our sex was always powerful because we were both very present in our bodies, but that night it was spiritually explosive. The kind of love that makes miracles happen. From then on, we were inseparable. I told him just to move in with me so we could start a family. We'd take it one day at a time, but our days went until 4 a.m., staying up talking. He brought his vintage record player and LPs, filling my home, our home, with his music, Bob Marley and reggae. And I made sure he knew every Willie, Waylon, and Hank I'd ever loved. The area where we always sat had a little fountain, and we lived in peace and gratitude that we found each other after not knowing we'd ever love again. When a dream falls through, you think maybe it's lost forever. And there we were, ready to scoop it up and take that second chance. There was only one catch. Wharton. Eric had been accepted to business school at UPenn. On paper, it would be crazy not to take that opportunity, and I wasn't going to stop him. I even bought him a computer as a going-away gift, and I talked myself out of being disappointed when he went to visit Philadelphia to pick out an apartment. The weekend before he was set to leave, I had to go to Dallas to do some work for the collection. Eric started packing while I was away, probably knowing it would be hard for me to watch him do that and keep my poker face. But as he packed, he later told me he started getting upset. The whole point of going to Wharton was to anchor himself and meet people so he could build a community. He'd done that here with me and our friends. When I came home, he said he was having second thoughts about business school. It was only then that I said my piece. "I have a GED and my business just cleared $750 million," I said. "We're closing in on $1 billion and trending up." A GED. "You don't need to go to Wharton. You can hire someone who went to Wharton." He thought long and hard and spoke to several mentors and coaches from his past. Eric confided in them that he knew he would marry me and we would raise kids together. If Wharton could jeopardize that future, it wasn't worth it. "All right," he told me. "I'm going to the Jessica Simpson Business School." I was so relieved. The irony is that soon after, I told him that I was returning to the Persian Gulf. I said it so casually that he was confused. "Just a couple days," I said. Kidding aside, in October I went back to the USS Truman to pay a visit to the troops. Back then, it seemed crazy that the war in Afghanistan had been going for 9 years, and the war in Iraq was then at 6 years. I didn't want service members to feel forgotten. I was working on a second Christmas album, recording it quickly for a November release. I really wanted to do a duet of "I'll Be Home for Christmas" with a service member. I chose that song because I believed they should all be able to come home. My dad arranged for it as only he could. The crew of the Truman had an American Idol-style competition, and when I flew in, I would judge the final eight with the winner becoming my duet partner. It was beautiful. I watched eight sailors and Marines perform, and the clear winner was Petty Officer John Britt. I remember he was on his fifth or sixth tour. We recorded his part of the record in the announcement room of the Truman, and I invited him to also perform with me at the Rockefeller tree lighting appearance I had scheduled for later that month. He wasn't sure he could, and my dad said he'd make it happen for him. He did, and John's wife and child were able to come to New York to see him perform with me. I was so proud of that and my father for making it happen. The media didn't give my trip the coverage I wanted it to bring to the service members, but I was resigned to that. But then I accidentally handed them a headline: "Jess is running with Nick."
So a girl walks into a Mexican restaurant with her boyfriend and a crew from the collection. My mom and all the girls had been working so hard, so we thought we'd all leave the showroom one night and have fun in the form of margaritas at Red O. They brought us to a table, and as soon as we sat down, the energy at the table got really awkward. Someone whispered to my mom, and she scanned the room quick. "Jess, Nick is here," she said. "He's with Vanessa." I looked up, but I didn't see them at all. "He spotted you," my mom said. I couldn't for the life of me see him. The restaurant was dark with red and gold lighting, but it wasn't that dark. My heart started going into overdrive, and I began drinking heavily, thinking it would help everybody loosen up. When even the waitstaff started to seem anxious, I realized this was ridiculous. I stood up. "I'm just going to go say hi and make it not awkward," I told the table. "Where is he?" People made subtle head nods in the direction of what seemed to be the entire restaurant, which, while subtle, was not helpful. "Well, I'll find them," I said, smoothing my shirt. I'd been working, so this was hardly how I imagined looking when I spoke with my ex for the first time in years. But hey, growth. I walked further into the restaurant, squinting and craning my neck to see him. Finally, I stopped and did a 360 scan of the place. I couldn't see him. I turned back to my table and everybody's eyes were wide open, staring at me. "I don't see him," I said, just loud enough that my voice would carry to my table. "I don't." So I marched back. "Jessica, you were right there next to them," my mom said. "You guys, I swear I did not see them," I said. "And I'm not wasted. Now I'm going to drink because I feel like a freaking idiot." I started crying, so Eric and I left. My mom went to them and tried to smooth things over. "I don't know why Jessica didn't see you," she told Nick. "It was probably for the better," he said. He might have been annoyed, but he was graceful to my mom, and I appreciated that. I still don't know why I didn't see him. Maybe God put blinders on me so I wouldn't be tempted to look back and just keep moving forward.